Brassy Broadcast number 69, Laura Shanley on social media and activism. Hey, thanks for pressing play on this episode of the Brassy Broadcast. I'm your host, Jen Eads. I'm a musician, a student of the creative universe, and a curious girl full of questions. I'm also the HBIC, head broad in charge at the Brassy Broadcasting Company, where I help do-gooders of all kinds create and produce podcasts and other audio content. Before we jump into this episode, I want to give you a little heads up that we'll be talking about some grown-up things, so this might not be the best episode to listen to if you've got sensitive little ears around. Or if you're easily offended, this might not be the episode for you either. Joining me in this episode of the Brassy Broadcast is Laura Shanley, also known as Sue Magina. Laura is the founder of the Facebook page Periods for Pence, which she started after growing disgusted with then-Governor of Indiana, Mike Pence. You know, that guy that's now the vice president. As of today, the Facebook page has over 95,000 likes and is a really active community. And Laura has been interviewed by a number of national media outlets. Now, truth be told, I'm not a Mike Pence fan. When I discovered Periods for Pence, I was inspired to write a song, and I'll have a link to that in the show notes if you want to check it out. Fortunately, he's not the focus of this episode. Our conversation centers around the ways that we can become more active in politics and make our voices heard. We talk about what Laura has learned about activism since she started the Facebook page, and I'll tell you, there have been some hard lessons. And we also talk about steps we can take to begin to heal our divided nation. This is by no means an all-encompassing conversation about women's rights or activism and what and how we should be doing things or protesting. It's Laura's experience and what she's learned along the way. So take from it what you will and use it where it makes sense in your life. Enjoy my conversation with Laura Shanley. Laura Shanley, welcome to the Brassy Broadcast.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
So you've been a busy gal the last year or so.
It's been the year of the Laura. It's been a really crazy year. Yeah. Not what I had planned, not what I thought was going to happen in my life ever. This was not a planned thing. So it's been a busy year.
Yeah. So let's just jump right in with the whole Periods for Pence, which then has grown into Periods for Politicians. Yes. Were you like an activist?
No,
before?
I had literally nothing to do. Okay. I've always been interested in politics. Mm-hmm. That has sort of, my parents paid attention to politics, although you would never know if they were Republicans or Democrats. They wouldn't talk about that. But I was the nerd in high school, like, because all of my buddies were watching Arsenio Hall, and I watched Politically Incorrect with Bill Maher and my mom. And after Bill Maher, they would show the Rush Limbaugh radio show. So I would watch Bill Maher and be like, yeah, I totally get this. And then I'd watch Rush Limbaugh and go like, wake my mom up and be like, you cannot believe what this man said. And she was just like, oh, crap. So, I was not an activist. I actually had worked as a social worker with women and families who were in the court system sort of fighting with domestic violence or sexual assault. Okay. So women's issues have always been very important to me. Mm-hmm. But I didn't ever see myself as an activist. And when I started this page, I was actually on hiatus from that job teaching pre-K at church. So that was awkward.
So how did that work for you being in Indiana?
You know, I grew up in Arkansas, and Arkansas is a red state and has a lot of backward stuff about it. But like any place, you're going to find really good people also. Mm-hmm. And I miss Arkansas. I'm never going to trash talk it or anything. Indiana has been a wake up call for me because, you know, you kind of think, okay, things are going to get better and things are going to progress. And when I moved here as an adult, not as a child, mm-hmm. I saw a lot of opportunity. And so I have seen that sort of regress and seen politics do what it's done all over the nation, which is move backward. Mm-hmm. I am well loved in some circles in Indiana and very despised in others. And I just have had to come to live with that.
How do you digest that? How does that, like, how do you even process that? Like, do you care anymore?
No, not really. I mean, of course it hurts your feelings, sure. Right? When somebody says something mean about you or whatever, yeah, that hurts because I'm a human being. But those are the same people. I mean, like, that aren't doing anything. Mm-hmm. They aren't doing anything for their side. They aren't. They may be holding up pictures of abortion porn and shouting at women. You know, mm-hmm. I don't really care what those people think. Yeah. That's just what makes me really frustrated is when people go, stay in your lane. I get that a lot. Like, if I want to talk about something that's not a woman's issue. Mm-hmm. That's when I get really kind of frustrated when they go, this isn't anything about this. This has nothing to do with you. I'm like, okay.
Why can't you talk about a variety
right.
of things?
That's not what they signed up for.
Yeah.
So, which I understand that too. But, you know, again, sometimes they sort of see Periods for Pence as an organization.
Uh-huh.
And because we've grown so large, uh-huh. they think that we're this big group of people when in reality, it's one person's Facebook page.
Yeah.
And, you know, now I have a couple of people helping me. And I've had, you know, a person here and there. But yeah, it's still just one person's view of things. So you take the good with the bad.
So let me ask you this, because this is something that I've seen come up. And sometimes I kind of feel this myself. What gives you the right?
Yeah. And I sort of ask myself that question. Like, who the hell am I?
Right.
I'm not... You know, I don't have a degree in women's studies. I don't. Who am I? I'm not. But that's also kind of why it works, right?
Right.
Because I'm not somebody special. Because I'm not Cecile Richards. Mm-hmm. I am just a regular person that sees things from the same point of view that other regular people see them.
Right.
And I think that's part of what worked about Periods for Pence and why it took off, because, you know, I was learning as I went. And so I would have to apologize as much as I had to post and be like, I'm sorry, guys, I'm learning, you know,
yeah.
let me get a handle on this. And that human side, I think, worked for people. Mm-hmm. And that's still where I'm at. I'm not anybody special. I don't get to hang out with the political parties and I don't know the governor and I don't, like, that's not who I am. I'm just a person that communicates with people.
How did this whole thing even start? How did Periods for Pence originate?
Okay, so when Mike Pence ran for governor, like I said, I paid attention to politics enough to pay attention. And I was like, why is this guy running for governor? I mean, right, here he was in Congress for 12 years. He had authored or co-sponsored 3 bills in 12 years, and all of them, none of them ever even made it into committee. Like, they are out of committee. So he was a pretty ineffective politician. So then he thinks he wants to run the state. And I'm thinking, surely this is not going to happen. And then there goes Indiana, surprising me again. I just watched him make inept decision after ridiculous choice. And then he did RFRA. Mm-hmm. RFRA made me so mad and disgusted and, like, offended as a person who is a Christian.
Mm-hmm. So tell us a little bit about RFRA and what that entailed.
So RFRA was the Religious Freedom Restoration Act. And basically what he was saying is that a business had a right to not serve someone based on their religious beliefs, which sort of all circles back around to Citizens United, that businesses are people and blah, blah, blah. And basically what he was saying was that he tried to make it about ministers, which had nothing to do with it, actually, but that wedding vendors, restaurants, caterers, anything like that, did not have to serve at a same-sex wedding or did not have to serve same-sex couples if they felt that violated their religion. And the problem that I had with that is, you know, like I said, I grew up in the Deep South when it was still sort of segregated a little bit. I mean, we're still struggling with some of that desegregation stuff down there. And I know people that could very easily have said, well, it's against my religion to serve an interracial couple.
Oh, okay.
It's against my religion to serve a Black person.
Mm-hmm.
Is that okay then? Of course that's not okay. Mm-hmm. And it just sort of made me sick in my stomach. And then he came out with 1337. So H.R. 1337 was the law that he passed that essentially stated that a woman who had a miscarriage or an abortion was required to bury or cremate the remains. One of its other lovely highlights was that conception started at fertilization, not at implantation, which is what every biology person will tell you. Any biology professor would say that. So it was scientifically inaccurate, number one. But number two, women shed fertilized eggs in their period. You can have sex and have a fertilized egg and lose it. You can lose hundreds. So I'm thinking to myself as I'm watching the news, well, how's he going to enforce that?
Yeah.
Right? Like, what's he going to do? And I looked at my husband and I go, what do we need to just call him and report when we have a period just so he knows? And I will never forget, he looked at me and he goes, you might be onto something. So I went back and I threw up a Facebook page and I typed out a rant and I shared it on a couple of, you know, like-minded sort of pages in the state, and said, let's call him. Let's do our civic duty and make sure he knows that we might be expelling fertilized eggs. And so, yeah, I thought I might have 100 people that would call the state house and that would hopefully get our point across. And within 3 weeks, I want to say we had about 60,000 followers.
Wow.
And we shut down the phone lines at the Capitol. They couldn't keep up with the call volume. Yeah. One day they had to just shut the phone lines down.
So were you just completely caught off guard by all of that?
Yeah.
What do you think worked? Do you think it was because, I mean, it's kind of funny. Like, it's kind of not funny, but it's kind of funny.
Yeah, I think you know, we've stood here and I've thought a lot about this because what I really did was kind of catch lightning in a bottle. Yeah. It was a moment in time with an issue and a politician that already had enough ire stirred up against him.
Sure.
But the fact that, I mean, I prank called them, and I hate to say prank called because I was calling about a serious issue, but I was calling to report my period, and I would call them every day. Every call that I posted on the page was an actual call that I made to the actual governor's office. And I would say things like, hey, I hit a pothole on I-70 and I'm worried it might have jiggled something loose up in there. So let me know if I need to report that or not. So people would come up with these hilarious scenarios of, you know, I would just call and say, hey, the communists are in the fun house. Those are my favorite. To call and like give these euphemisms, right, for periods.
Yeah, I learned so many.
Right.
From the Twitter feed and the Facebook page.
And for vagina. There are lots of words for vagina. So yeah, more than I knew. Even we would have people that would go, you know, why don't you use, what was the one? Meat flaps. That was, I don't think I want to use meat flaps, but thanks for the suggestion.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think that the humor. We've yelled, we've protested, we've called, we've done all this. Well, I don't know that we were calling enough before, actually. I think the humor helped, but I also think that it gave people a direct line to the person that they wanted to speak to. Because I kept getting messages that said, I didn't know that I could call my legislator. I didn't know I could do this. I didn't know I could call the governor. And now we have 5 calls and we have Countable and we have all of these apps and sites that are helping you do this, and Indivisible that are telling you what to say when you call. And so, yeah, that's a door that I feel like we didn't open that. That was already open, but we sort of opened it for a lot of people that weren't aware it was out there. So, yeah, I think it was kind of that mix of humor and accessibility.
Yeah, I think you're right. Because I noticed, so I was inspired by the post to write a song.
Yes.
About our then governor. And I shared it on my page. And I found that even people that were Republicans were like, this is funny.
This is.
And they were, because.
Yes.
They may be more fiscally Republican, but socially
right.
more liberal, or at least something about it resonated with them.
Yeah.
So then they would share it on their page. And they were getting, you know, comments like, why would you share this? You're a Republican. And they were like, why wouldn't I?
Right.
I mean, just why wouldn't
a,
I?
It's funny. Hello.
Yeah.
And B, even Republicans, and I found this out after I started Periods for Pence, were not overly fond of our governor.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, I can't use names mm-hmm. with a lot of this, but I had many contacts that were Republicans that mm-hmm. would say, this is what's going on. This is what's happening in the governor's office today.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I had a mole kind of that would communicate with me and say, well, today he just walked in the door and slammed it and locked it and wouldn't talk to anybody because there were so many calls. And I don't think that Republicans in this state were overly fond of him because of his extreme, you know, he was just so theocratic and mm-hmm. so extreme that it sort of ruffled their Hoosier sensibilities a little bit too, I think.
Yeah, because I think my experience having grown up in this state is Indiana's a state full of good people.
Absolutely.
And I think that he did some things that really kind of gave us a bad rap, especially on a national stage, especially with RFRA.
Yes.
And I can tell you it's frustrating growing up, or not growing up, but being a tax-paying citizen mm-hmm. That happens to be gay, to then be made to feel like a second-class
exactly.
citizen.
And I think he did that with the LGBTQ community. I mm-hmm. think he did that with women. I mm-hmm. think he did that with non-Christians. He alienated more people than he actually brought in. And I think that most Republicans saw that, saw the writing on the wall.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there were some Republicans that were actively campaigning against him mm-hmm. and giving fundraisers for John Gregg.
Oh, wow.
That I found out about. Not going to say who, but
yeah.
He's not our problem now, other than he still is.
Right.
But not. Yeah.
So you did Periods for Pence and ran the Facebook page anonymously.
Yes.
For a long time using the alias Sue Magina.
Sue Magina. That was the name I would leave when I called the governor.
Why use an alias? Why not be right out there out front from the start?
Well, as I said, I worked for a very conservative organization, mm-hmm. which it wasn't necessarily to protect my job as much as it sort of was to protect my boss. I really liked my boss.
Uh-huh.
And I knew that she was going to have to fire me.
Yeah.
Like, there was no doubt in my mind. She's going to have to fire me.
Uh-huh.
And I thought, you know what? I would rather leave and save her that discomfort and just not leave on a positive note once they figure out that it's me, but
right.
not put her through that.
Yeah.
So that was part of it. You know, in the beginning, when it really blew up, it was like the first week in April. And uh-huh. I remember that because it was my son's spring break. And we were in Washington, D.C.
Oh, gosh.
And I was in the airport mm-hmm. here in Indy getting ready to catch a flight. And I got an email on my Periods for Pence email. And it said, this is so-and-so with Playboy magazine. Would you call me? And I'm like, what? So I called and I'm sitting here giving an interview to Playboy magazine uh-huh. in the airport.
Oh, my gosh.
And by the time I got off the plane in D.C., I had probably a good 30 emails of journalists, different publications saying, mm-hmm. you know, we just want to talk to you. So I stayed anonymous partly to just protect my privacy, right? Mm-hmm. Because I live in a conservative area.
Sure.
I wasn't ready to sort of take on that mantle of public public whipping boy yet. And also just for safety, you know, we, my husband has been a huge support to me through all of this. And so he would go through and read any of the comments on the media so that I didn't have to. But mostly to track and make sure that somebody wasn't making threats against me or against my family. And I would get scary messages through periods for Pence sometimes. Yeah. You know, I would, one of my favorite comments was, it's hard to even say, I'm pro-life and I hope you die a miserable death from AIDS and are barren. And I'm like, you are super pro-life, lady. Right. Like, I was dying. And so, but I mean, like, one, I got a really scary one time that was like, don't think nobody knows who you are.
Oh, wow.
And so that kind of stuff did happen. Uh-huh. Not as much as I thought it might.
Yeah. At any point, were you ready just to hang it up and be like, I'm done with this? Really?
I didn't feel like I could. Once it started growing and I had all these women and these women were, we all became dependent on each other.
Uh-huh.
You know, they didn't need me. They needed each other.
Uh-huh.
We all needed each other. I needed them.
Yeah.
So it wasn't really about me at that point. I was just the moderator for this group that grew.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we have people, I want to say, in 29 countries.
Oh, my gosh.
That are following at this point.
Mm-hmm.
There was a protest in Poland called the Black Monday protest where women went on strike and wore black all day. And they literally did it. I mean, they didn't care if they were going to lose their job or not.
Oh,
they were
gosh.
Out. Like, not one woman showed up to work in that country. And they had, you know, messaged me and said, how do I do this? How do I get started in social media to get the word out? And, you know, so... when you have that kind of stuff going on,
right?
Big stuff. I'm using big arm gestures here. You can't really walk away from it.
Yeah.
And I was in a sort of protective bubble. I mean, you know, I was Sue Magina. And I gave interviews, but people were more than okay to accommodate my safety.
Sure.
You know, before I decided to become public, I did call my local police dispatcher people or the police office and said, here's what's going on. And if I call, there is a legitimate threat. And the night that we did sort of a public outing sort of thing.
Yes, I was there.
You were there and played, which I appreciated so much. You know, we went that night and stayed in a hotel so that nobody would follow me back to my house.
Oh, wow.
Just those kinds of weird things that you don't usually have to think about.
Yeah.
And then once I sort of came out, for lack of a better term, came out of the activism closet, it hasn't been bad. It was weirder and more scary when I was hiding.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Why do you think that is?
I think they know. Well, I say this right now. I'm probably on some list somewhere.
You're definitely the naughty list.
Like, yeah, I really was nervous that I wouldn't be able to fly home.
Oh, my gosh.
I was like, are they going to put me on a no-fly list after I went to the Women's March? please let me get home. And I still won't travel out of the country just to be safe right now. But, yeah, I think there's just a safety that comes from the knowledge of who you are, right? I don't have to hide. I don't have to feel afraid. My neighbors all know. They're going to look out for me.
Yeah.
I have my son's community at school. They're all looking out for him. Yeah. So there will be another flare up. Something will happen. Right now, they're trying to defund Planned Parenthood. That's in there, overturning the ACA, which is ridiculous. You know, Planned Parenthood gets reimbursed by the government just like any other medical provider when they serve women who are on Medicare or Medicaid, either one. And so that's what they get their money from the government for. They don't just get free money. It's reimbursement. Yeah. So what he's saying to a hospital essentially is, I'm not going to reimburse you for treating poor women. I'm going to make it harder for you to treat women who are most in need of your services because of this one issue. And that disgusts me on every level. So it's probably good that I'm not on Facebook right now and I'm on sabbatical, but, you know, it ebbs and flows and we'll see what issue comes up next.
So how do we, as like normal, I mean, just normal women in our state, how do we then, because it feels like we're really super divided as a country, I think even as a state now, how do we get everybody back together? Because I swear, I feel like we are so much more alike, but as you scroll through Facebook pages and the name calling and, you know, the Twitter trolls and all of that, like, how do we as normal people, what do you think we can do to fix that?
Well, I think it's important to not engage in the name calling and the, you know, rhetoric of both sides.
Right.
Although
I am a proponent of some of that.
Yeah. I mean, it's ugly on both sides.
Yeah.
You know, I kind of always prided myself in being a realistic proponent of women's choice, right? Because I'm not saying that, hey, abortion is the best thing in the world.
Right, yeah.
I'm saying that there are situations that, and women that need to be protected when they have to make these types of decisions. Mm-hmm. And those women are being punished because of these supposed, you know, women that use it just for birth control.
Yeah.
Okay, maybe that's true. But what about the woman that this is a very wanted pregnancy? And what about, you know, what about those women that are grieving and then you're making them jump through these hoops? They need our protection too.
Yeah.
And so, you know, when you approach it from a human standpoint and this is who it might negatively affect and from a compassionate view, I think that that opens people up to listening and being more receptive. But I also think, you know, we're living in the fake news.
Right.
You know, quote unquote. I just made air quotes with my fingers. So you have to also call bullshit out when you see
it. Yeah.
And say, hey, that's not true.
Right.
Here's what's true. And this is what's causing the problem. That's what's really funny to me, because it's when you say this is the truth and people go, well, that's not what I heard. And that's not what I choose to believe.
Yeah. So it's kind of that what we're choosing.
Yeah.
What we're choosing to believe.
And so you can't. You can't change those people.
Yeah.
So don't try. Right. So what we have to do is make our community stronger instead of trying to change them. They're not coming over to our side.
Yeah.
So how do we then do that? Do we continue to stay active? Absolutely. Do we continue to speak out? Yes, write letters, postcards.
Is it making a difference? Do you think since then and since the election, is it like, have you seen a visible difference?
Oh, yeah, I think so. Because I really think that there are some Republicans who are getting so inundated with phone calls about things that it's giving them a little bit of pause. Where at least they're going, oh, this is, and it sucks because what they're saying is this is not conducive to my political career. If this many people are calling,
right,
that hurts my chances for reelection. What you want them to be saying is this is obviously not a good choice because look how many people know that it's a bad choice.
Right.
But yeah, I think you hear on the news a lot, you know, they report that how many calls are coming in, and yeah. I think so. There are things that we're not going to be able to affect, but we have to try to do what we can because otherwise nothing's going to change and they're just going to mow us over.
Yeah, I agree. I saw that because we're friends on Facebook. So you're taking a Facebook hiatus.
I am. I'm on sabbatical.
How's that working out for you?
It sucks. I am, you know, I really went into some deep sort of thought, and I felt like I was sort of being called to step away for Lent. And I'm a practicing Christian. And so I was like, ooh, you're really making it hard on me this year. But I knew it's what I needed to do. You know, it's hard when you write every day. I just kind of was to the point where I'm like, I've spent all my ideas and I've spent all my words, and I need to sort of refocus and be renewed and have the joy back.
Yeah. So how do you get that joy back?
You know, being off of Facebook has sort of helped that, strangely, because, you know, for a while that was what gave me my joy. But right. then it got, when the election happened, I was just so stunned and just, ugh, everybody felt this, right? Yucky, and you don't want to fight.
Yeah.
You just feel beaten.
Yeah.
So I just needed some time, and I've spent a lot of time with my family, and I've read more books, which has been helpful. I'm actually going to start writing a book. I was approached by an agent. Yes.
Cool.
To write. And so this was like a chance to sort of give myself a break so that I feel more amped up and I can get started on that project. So how do you get the joy back? How do you get the joy back? I can't answer that. Yeah, getting off of social media. I don't want everybody to get off of social media, obviously, but limit it a little bit because it's crazy right now.
Yeah.
I took a couple of days where I just turned the news off
and
just saw what was on my phone. That helped a lot, actually. And I've taken some more time to just do stuff that I love. Like I sit and I listen to music and I read books and those things that we sort of make secondary in our lives. That's what gives us the energy. Those are the things that we need. So, and I hadn't had time to have those for a while.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's helped.
Facebook. So, I mean, you obviously needed social media to grow this movement. Do you feel like, what was the difference for you? Like Facebook interaction versus Twitter?
I'm better on Facebook.
Why do you think that is?
I'm not as limited.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's hard to get the funny across in the first place.
Yeah.
It's hard to write funny. And then you have to condense it into 140 characters. Yeah. That's hard.
Mm-hmm.
That's tough. So I've used Twitter more for my sort of call to action stuff.
Okay.
We that still have sense. People tweeting the vice president now, their period reports.
Uh-huh.
So we do that. You know, it's got its uses, but it's not the community of communicators that Facebook has built. Because these women and men that are in this group consistently amaze me. I mean, they've started meeting up. Oh, you live here? I live here. I've never met you. Let's hang out. You know, they start groups and they have all supported each other. And, you know, there are names that I see that are my friends now in real life on Facebook.
Yeah.
You know, So, it's just grown into sort of an international community of people who worry about women's issues in general, I think, and support each other.
Mm-hmm.
So that's pretty magical. That's pretty damn magical.
That is magical. Yes. So what can we do at this point? And I'm going to say, you know what? Regardless of what side of an issue you're on, what is the best way to make your voice heard that's going to be impactful?
If there's something specific that you want to address, I think a phone call is always going to get their attention.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, you can email. Some people say they prefer email. It just depends on the senator or your representative. But most of the time, I think a phone call is better. You need to give your address when you do it, right?
Okay.
You can't just call and say it. Mm-hmm. You want it to be tallied. Be polite. Everything doesn't need to be a period report, but you know, if you want to, go for it. I think that's important. I also think it's really important. Like I said, you know, you've got these apps. Countable is a really great app. It sort of lets you enter your zip code and it tracks local, like what your state legislators are voting on. And it also tracks what your national legislators have voted on or what they are going to be voting on.
Okay.
And it even gives you a script of what to say when you call. So, those types of resources, use those.
Mm-hmm.
No matter who you are, use them. And I think that we need more women running for office on both sides.
Mm-hmm.
Desperately.
Yeah.
You know, being a Democrat in Indiana is one of the hardest things that I've ever had to do. I'm a very lonely lefty. But I think we have to take the conversation back to humanity. I mean, Mm-hmm. I remember saying somewhere that empathy has to override theocracy at some point. And women, by nature, for the most part, they tend to be a little bit more empathetic to women's issues than men do.
Sure, sure.
So if we're not in those offices to speak with those men and say, okay, here's how this feels to be a woman and dealing with this.
Right.
Regardless, again, if you're a Democrat or a Republican, run for office. We need more hoo-has in the seats for sure. And if you don't want to run, then volunteer, you know, get out and knock on doors and make phone calls. 2018 will be here before we know it.
It will be. And why is it so important to vote in 2018?
Well, I mean, right now we have no balance. There is no system of checks and balances, which is what our government was based on. So we have, and historically, when you have an all Republican, you know, all branches are held by the Republicans, they've got the House, the Senate, and the White House right now. So we have no power. There is no check other than a vote that requires a supermajority, but then you get into, you know, other stuff. So, yeah, I mean, we've got to take at least one of those branches back, and we have a really good chance to do that in the Senate, which is the sort of stopgap.
Okay.
So we could do that, but it's also important on the local level because the federal.
I think we overlook the local stuff a lot.
We don't hear about it. You know, you hear about it if you watch the local news, but unless somebody really screws up, you don't hear about it on CNN or Fox News or Fox News. But yeah, I mean, when you start getting involved on the local level, that's when you make a difference in your own community, which, you know, I was really, when he did RFRA, I was so proud to see so many communities in Indiana stand up and say, I don't care if you pass this at the local level or at the state level, on our city won't discriminate.
Yeah.
We won't let this happen. So you can make a huge difference on the local level for people's lives and just daily life. The federal government maybe doesn't affect our daily life as much as local. But yeah, run for school board, run for city council, run for just run.
Run.
Or help. Call.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, they need. It's amazing to me how much money it costs to have a successful run for, let's say, a state office. Let's say you're just running for state representative. Well, they're going to tell you that you pretty much have to have $10,000. And that's a low end. That's just to sort of have your name out there and show up on the ballot. I've heard anywhere from $10,000 to $100,000.
Wow.
And then a Democrat, for a Democrat in Indiana, that's hard to raise.
That's salty. Yeah.
Republicans can do that in Indiana and they get a lot of outside help. Democrats don't.
Interesting. What is the biggest lesson that you've learned through all of this? Is there one?
A lot. A lot of them. I got a little frog in my throat when you asked me that. What I have really learned as a human being is how to learn to be gracious when you are wrong.
Really? Tell me more about that.
You know, I'm a middle-aged white woman who lives in Carmel. I don't struggle with some of the problems that other women struggle with. Do I support other women? Sure. Do I know they struggle with these problems? Of course I do, because I'm a human being and I like to pay attention. Do I really understand it? Maybe, but probably not. So I have had to learn to listen when a person who is not like me says, you're wrong about this, and here's why. And that's the hardest thing, right? Like when somebody comes to you and goes, you're not really intersectional. Because.
Yeah, and there's been a lot of discussion around that.
And it's a hard discussion. It makes you uncomfortable.
Yeah.
I had a post that just people became so furious with me because it was a female officer who shot a black gentleman. And the post that I made, the point that I was trying to make was that the fact that she was a woman was going to become another issue in addition to the obvious issue.
Right.
And maybe I didn't state that well. And maybe it really didn't freaking matter at that moment because mm-hmm. the Black community was grieving.
Right.
And instead of choosing to acknowledge that and realizing that, I highlighted another issue. And I didn't mean to do that. Obviously, sure. That wasn't, I just saw it as another issue. Let's talk about it as a whole. And so I was called a racist. I was called obtuse. It was a tough 3 days.
Mm-hmm.
And I did a lot of crying and a lot of soul searching and a lot of, and I finally had to go back on and just say I was wrong.
Yeah.
Which sucks. Nobody likes to say that.
Right.
And I'm sitting there and I'm going, of course I'm not a racist. Are you kidding? I'm not. Look what I'm doing.
Yeah.
You know. But I had to hear those voices. And that's uh-huh. so hard to just accept when you need to learn something.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I've learned in a lot of ways. That's one instance. To close your mouth and open your ears and open your heart and listen when somebody's not like you saying, I'm hurt by this issue.
Mm-hmm.
This is how I feel about it. You don't get to be the person who tells the person who feels oppressed mm-hmm. that they shouldn't feel oppressed.
Yeah.
That was the lesson. That's the biggest lesson I've learned.
I think that's a good lesson. I think a lot of us need to.
We all do.
Yeah.
And it's ongoing.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Like, mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that the more that we have these conversations, the more that's probably going to come up because why wouldn't it?
And we need to have the conversations. Mm-hmm. That's the thing, is that we've had all of these, you know, we were talking about how divided everything is. Mm-hmm. But some of that is because we didn't acknowledge the pain of the other people. And didn't talk about it openly and didn't explain why we didn't understand it, because it's awkward to say, I don't understand you.
Right.
I don't understand what it's like to be a single young Black woman struggling in her career in white bread Indiana. Right.
Mm-hmm.
I don't understand that.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean I'm not empathetic to it, but just to acknowledge I can't understand that. Mm-hmm. Makes me a better ally. So yeah, that's the lesson that I've learned, which has served me well in private life as well as Facebook life.
So how would you encourage us to be more open to those conversations and not just immediately shut down? Because like that would be my, well, if I'm just doing it wrong, mm-hmm. I'm just going to tune out. How do you overcome that initial shutdown response?
Realize that when you feel defensive about it, mm-hmm. that's when you need to be listening more. That defensiveness and that, I don't want to hear this, that's the stuff you really need to be hearing. And that's in everything in your life, right?
Right, yeah.
But when somebody says to you, you're being racist.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my God, everybody, you naturally just get defensive.
Sure.
Any human being does.
Yeah.
Which causes you to not be able to hear what it is that you're doing that they're perceiving as racism.
Mm-hmm.
So, granted, maybe in your mind, it's not racist and that's not how you meant it. And that's certainly, you know, but reality is perception.
Right.
So, if a person feels slighted by something that I have said, mm-hmm. I need to listen to that and I need to learn from that. So the defense is the first sign.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I've got a lesson to learn here.
Yeah. Oh, that's hard.
It's awful. But once you do it, it's the most freeing feeling in the world. I feel so free now to just be like, I don't know about that. Tell me about that.
Yeah.
It's just opened up this whole experience in my life of learning about how to truly be intersectional and inclusive of other people and recognize that things need to change
mm-hmm.
and that it's okay to have an uncomfortable conversation.
Yeah.
Because that's how we move forward. there are always going to be uncomfortable conversations to have, you know, but that's how we move forward.
Yeah.
If it was easy, the problems would be fixed.
So what's next for periods for politicians?
We're going to stay vigilant. We're going to stay focused on any kind of legislation that targets women and reproductive justice. And reproductive justice as a whole, not necessarily just abortion rights. Mm-hmm. You know, we're looking at education. We're looking at the economy. We're looking at lots of different issues, really, are reproductive justice issues. And starting on the book.
Right on.
So that'll be a whole new journey.
Yes.
To take that on. So we'll see how it goes.
All right. Yeah. And I will include links in the show notes to the Facebook and Twitter page.
Awesome.
So people can connect with you there. And we look forward to seeing what's next.
I look forward to it myself because I do not know. So we'll take the journey together.
All right. I hope you enjoyed that conversation with Laura Shanley as much as I did. Here are my big takeaways and action items. Number one, shut up and listen. Get out of your comfort zone, have a real conversation, not some meaningless back and forth on Facebook, and listen to people that are different from you, that have different experiences. Number two, do something. Don't just sit around talking about how bad things are. Get off your ass and go do something to change it. Or stop talking about it. Number three, go to the App Store or Google Play and download the apps that Laura mentioned. I downloaded Five Calls, Countable, and Indivisible. I've got to tell you, Five Calls really does make it incredibly simple to call your representatives. It gives you the phone number and a script if you don't know what to say. And be nice when you call. Be nice to that person on the other end of the phone. Let me know how you plan on sharing your voice. You can tweet me at BrassyBroadJen or send me an email at Jen, J-E-N, at BrassyBroad.com. I love hearing from you. Now get out in the world and do some good.